Days with Alan Steinfeld. This program is dedicated to exploring evolving human potentials in an evolving world. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and each week I try to bring people to this program who are moving the path of consciousness further along. They are part of our evolution as a planetary race. And tonight I have two very important special guests. My first guest is Laura Fox, who is one of the producers of the Raw Spirit Festival, which is coming up in Sedona, Arizona, one of my favorite places, October 12th to the 14th. And she is also someone who does a whole visionary process called Anchor the Dream, and we'll be talking to Laura about those things. Hi, Laura, are you there?
Hi, Alan. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yes, I'm excited about both these different projects you're involved in. And let's talk about the Raw Spirit Festival first.
Sure.
And I think part of our conscious evolution is becoming more conscious of the foods we eat. And tell us about your background in raw food and how that ties into consciousness.
Oh, absolutely. That's a fantastic question because, you know, it absolutely does. And even the alchemists and the adepts of the esoteric traditions have been saying for centuries that raw foods or the diet and consciousness is directly related. When you start looking for immanence, and, you know, we've all been into transcendence to varying degrees to reach our spiritual potential. But now we're at a very crucial point on the earth where we're needing to bring all that spiritual wisdom into our cells and into our body and into our being in a fully present, imminent way. And the quickest way to do that is to start shifting the diet to a higher vibrational frequency. And the best way to do that is through raw, vegan, plant food diet.
So you're saying, I like what you said about the alchemists, too, because they were, I mean, I studied alchemy or internal alchemy and talked about the shift in vibration, because that's really what we're all after on what they called the great work.
Yes, the great work.
That is, it's actually transforming on all three levels, the body, mind, and the spirit, into the higher essences.
That's right, and they talk about, I think it's Malkut, right, which is the...
Oh, yes.
The lower body has to be the key. It's the key. It's the beginning.
That's right. And so many spiritual people forget the body.
That's right.
And so
they think they can, well, what is called a spiritual bypass, right?
Well, the joke is they've incarnated here in order to include the body.
That's right.
Because otherwise we didn't need to incarnate.
That's right. And if the body is the temple of the living God, or, you know, whatever word you use for spirit, love, God, divine presence, then, you know, we're meant to clean the temple and allow its full presence to activate. And the foods of our culture have for centuries, and particularly in this century, created obstructions in the physical body. I mean, you could call it heart disease, you could call it liver disease, but it's some kind of a congestion caused by the misuse of plant foods.
That's a really good point. And the fact now that we're becoming more conscious of everything we're putting in our body and putting into the earth, because the earth then becomes the body is a symbol of the earth.
That's right.
So we are in a position now. I actually heard Andrew Cohen. Do you know his work?
Andrew, yes. I believe. Is he a Buddhist guy?
No, he's sort of an enlightened American teacher. But he said we in the West are in a very privileged position because we have been educated enough and we have access to world culture that it's really up to us to lead the way forward into these new times.
I agree.
And so it really comes down to us being as responsible as we can for the planet.
Absolutely. And I like to call raw veganism the sustainable feast.
Oh,
because not only
right.
are we evolving our spiritual potential by removing obstructions and creating a greater input of energy into every cell and into the organs and into the entire chakra system by eating raw foods, but we're also using less packaging. We're also, you know, using less resources because plant foods take a lot less than animal foods.
Oh, I know. I don't even go into supermarkets anymore, but if I go to like a local grocery, they put their food in a box, in a bag, in another bag, inside a box. It's just so insane.
It is insane. And some of the people who are going to be at the Raw Spirit Festival, like, for example, Adam of Superfoods Next, he's come up with a packaging that's not only biodegradable but also compostable.
Oh, really? You mean it's like a plastic that's compostable?
Yeah, and I think it's, I'm not sure what it's made of, if it's cornstarch or something else. I have to get him to remind me. But in other words, there's people like on the leading edge here who are really trying to do their best on all levels. If we are going to be shipping and packaging foods around, let's do it in the most sustainable way and keep pushing the envelope of what that is and what our technology is capable of.
I know. It's just so insane to buy Fiji water that's been carted around the world in a plastic bottle. I mean, it's great water, I have to say, but it's just insane.
It is great water, but it, yeah, it's like the you know, the plastic is not helping our bodies either in the water.
And just think of all the boat mileage and pollution and the water, and just how ridiculous it is to bring water from Fiji to like New York City.
Let's keep our water clean here, and then we can actually drink it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten ourselves in such a deep mess that it's drastic what we have to do now to get ourselves out of it, you know?
Well, I think that's why a lot of people, we're waking up on all levels, and one of them is on the dietary level, and I like to think of it like this. It's like you're going to, if somebody goes to raw foods first, eventually they're going to wake up spiritually and on a conscious social level. If they go to the spirituality or the social consciousness first, eventually they're going to get to a higher and higher level of diet, because all of those things are a vibrational match to one another.
That is such a good point that, you know, I sort of had a sense of that, but you really put it into words. I mean, you're absolutely right. If your diet is clean and healthy and pretty raw, that will wake you up to a spiritual. And you're right. And also, if you are on a spiritual conscious evolution, you're not going to eat junk.
Right. It evolves. Now, a lot, you know, a lot of, like, spiritual masters in India and things like that, they were very attached, or still are to a great degree, attached to the rice and the dairy and all that stuff, which still creates a little stickiness and obstructions. And I always like to say, if, you know, if Yogananda and all those guys had found out about raw foods, they'd probably still be here today if they wanted to.
Right. Although Michio Kushi, who started macrobiotics, which I was involved in for a while, said if you don't have anything to stick to, there's nothing that gets stuck. You know what I'm saying? No, if there's no junk in your body, then none of those, like, grain-type products and, you know, will get stuck in them. He used to smoke cigarettes, but, you know, but everyone has their own food philosophy. I think obviously, the purer the diet, the cleaner your system is.
Exactly. And you can get away. You have a little more leverage. I mean, if you eat mostly raw foods, then you have leverage to do a little cooked or a little whatever. You know, it depends on everybody's body is different and needs different things, too.
I know. It's really, I host the nutritional panel at the expo, the New Life Expo here in New York, and it's just so funny to see how radical. I mean, just eating rice for somebody is radical.
Radical. Mm-hmm.
And then you tell people, well, rice creates mucus in the body, and they can't handle that.
Right.
And then going, you know, uncooked food, raw food, living food, and then like someone like Jazz Mohini, no food.
No food, right. We take it in baby steps here, you know, because, you know, people do think it's extreme, but what I like to say is, you know, if somebody says, why do you have such a extreme diet? Why are you limiting yourself? Well, A, it doesn't feel like a limitation, because I feel like the luckiest person in the world eating the most delicious foods, because it has the most flavor, you know?
Yeah, oh, they do have the most. I mean, once you've eaten anything organic, you can't go back to something that's not.
Right. And flavor equals minerals. So if you're eating something organic and you're tasting a difference between it and something that's not organic, a large reason for that, part of the reason for that is the mineral content of the plant food.
Oh, you know, I never realized. Of course, that
pigment,
makes...
Yeah, pigment and flavor. That's about minerals.
Oh, that is great. I mean, it's so obvious, but, like, people don't... And we need those minerals in our bodies.
Right, and, I mean, if you think about, again, even the spiritual current, the currency, the energy, the electricity, the electromagnetic energy of life itself, the life force, and you think of batteries, you know, batteries have mineral content to them. So what our typical standard American diet does is actually depletes the body of mineral content, which also lessens the capacity of consciousness to hold current.
Yeah, it's so obvious and simple. Why are commercial food businesses still in business? I mean,
I think people are, you know, it's their comfort zone with food, and the last thing any of us want to do is, like, try to tell somebody how they should eat. you know, because it sets up a reaction pattern.
Right.
And so, but the thing is, if people are in their comfort zone and they're still wanting those foods because they look at raw foods and they're like, they feel like they're going to be deprived.
Mm.
And you have to, like, really be modeled that it's not about deprivation at all. It's not about eating carrots for the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, it's actually a luscious, sumptuous diet. So if people can see that, A, they get to feel better, B, they get to have more energy, C, their libido even increases, if that's what they want, you know, their life force energy in general increases, you know, D, they're helping the planet, et cetera, et cetera, then it doesn't become a lack anymore.
Well, yeah, actually, when I interviewed David Wolf a few years back, he talked about what it is that people think they are missing when they go to raw. They're missing the crunchy or the oily or the fat, you know, and he developed a really great way to supply those. I'm sure
that's
other people
right.
at the, and David Wolf will be at the festival.
He will be. He's doing about 5.5 hours on the stage, and so David, you know, besides being a great raw foods teacher and a scientist, he's absolutely one of the most entertaining people on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never know what is going to come out of his mouth next, and it's always fascinating. So I love hearing what he has to say.
You know, and also one of the originals, Victoris Klavinskas, he is like, you know, he's one of the beginners in
the
whole raw foods.
Heart and soul of the raw foods movement.
Yeah, I mean, from Ann Wigmore, I guess he worked with Ann Wigmore, who was really the mother of the raw soul, raw food
yeah,
movement.
I think Victoris is one of her early apprentices and then became partners. And, you know, just basically, he is also one of the kindest and most, you know, spiritually oriented people I know as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The two go to get conscious food, conscious life, and a doorway into a higher level of who we are.
That's right. And right across the street from me in Sedona, here where I am on location for the Raw Spirit Festival, there's a woman named Shava Aima, who is she's a student of the ancient mystery teachings, and she's got a new book coming. I think it's called Living Light, and basically she's been studying, like you talk about, the secret teachings of the great work for many, many years, and literally in those teachings, once you actually decode it, they're talking about eating live food as an absolute key to raising your consciousness.
Well, I would love to meet her when I'm out there, for sure.
I'll make sure you do.
Yeah, and the other thing about live food, if you've ever had a garden and picked food fresh from the garden, there's so much chi and life force in that you really don't need to eat that much of it.
Exactly right.
Because it's so satisfying and so filling that it goes, it feels like it just goes right into the cells as a direct boost.
That's right. And so you have that, and then you have like you have an orchard of apples, you know, and you pick an apple and eat it. You're not going to overeat apples. But if you go to an apple pie, you might not be satisfied after one or even two pieces of pie. And a lot of people put a guilt trip on themselves about that. But the fact is, the reason they're not satisfied yet is probably twofold. A, with all the cooked sugar like that, any little mycotoxins or candida or yeast or mold are feeding on it and calling for more. And B, the minerals and enzymes and vitamins have been depleted out of that, and your body's not going to say it's not hungry anymore until it gets what it's really looking for, and that's enzymes, energy, vitamins, and minerals.
Right, and that's why people eat so much
and
they stuff themselves to get that full, satisfied feeling that we're missing because there's no life in the food.
That's right, and then they feel guilty and think they're a bad person because they're eating too much, and that's really not what it's about. So I want to personally let anyone off the hook who's believing that about themselves, you know? It's about the fact that your body wants something else. Your body wants minerals. It wants vitamins. It wants enzymes. It wants energy.
I mean, this kind of food education should be in every school in the country, you know?
I think so. And when you go, you know, if for people who have children and are seeing what's happening in a lot of the schools, they're feeding sugar and, you know, it's cakes and candies and junk food, and it's the norm. Mm. And, you know, some people say I have an extreme diet, but I say, well, you know, actually I'm very, very moderate and conservative, because on the one hand, red food dye to me is extreme.
Of course.
And on another hand, you know, maybe breatharianism, for sure, you could call that. I just eat plants. I mean, that's kind of like right in the middle, don't you think?
Well, it is extreme, but, you know, I mean, for some people, because they're so conditioned into thinking a certain way, I think when you open up to raw foods and all sorts of levels of higher consciousness, it gets you out of your comfort zone, out of the box.
Yes.
And it makes you think differently. I mean, you do think differently. It kind of goes together. You need to think differently in order to get out of that box. And also one step out will also help accelerate more evolution.
Right. What they say, yeah, it's like at first it might feel a little sluggish getting out of the box, but once you start taking those first steps, you get more momentum on the other side, and you start being vortexed into this new level of consciousness and energy and vitality. And then you don't want the other stuff. The fun part of eventually you don't want the other stuff. Eventually when you're given the choice between, shall I eat this piece of cooked pizza or this nice raw lasagna my friend just made, you're going to be like, you know what? I think I really want the lasagna, the raw food, because you're going to feel so much better. And once you have that knowing in your body from your experience, it's not like you're pushing stuff away. You're just gravitating toward what feels better.
Well, at this festival coming up, there's going to be some of the best raw food cooks in the world there.
Right.
And I recommend going to the website, checking out Coming to Sedona, rawspiritfest.com is the website. And the other thing about what we're saying is that it's taking place in Sedona, which is already a high vibration.
That's right.
And you know why it's a high vibration?
Why?
Well, the red rocks there have iron in it, and the iron creates a magnetic field that resonates with the iron in our blood. So it's lifting and purifying our blood in Sedona.
Well, maybe that's why my body feels so good here.
It does.
I feel like I'm floating here.
You are floating. You're in a high-intensity magnetic field. And do you notice when you leave Sedona, it feels like when you go past Bell Rock as you're heading south, when you go into the village of then it's just like, I've
rocks.
Left.
Yeah.
It's very noticeable because those red rocks create a magnetic field.
Yeah, neato. And then also, so we talked about the vortexes here and just the energies. And so the people who are being drawn to the festival are very high spiritual consciousness and just also just fun. And to me, you know, the highest spiritual consciousness is about being in play and being in fun and being in our joy while we're creating solutions to our many challenges to stay as much in a high vibration of playful exuberance as possible.
Well, then let's talk about that, creating solutions to our challenges and what Anchor the Dream is about, because that I really personally and for my community here in New York want to know more about visionary stewardship for planetary transformation. So tell me.
Absolutely, and I'm really honored to once again be offering an Anchor the Dream experience at the Raw Spirit Festival. It's going to be on Sunday afternoon, October 14th at the festival.
Well, tell me exactly what it is to anchor the dream.
Yeah, so basically let me just tell you a little story about how it even came about.
Yes.
After many, many years of intense prayer and inner work and just speaking with the universe, with the earth and the galaxy and the spirit, you know, of wanting to do something that actually helps, not just that my ego thinks might help, to really be of service in the highest way that I can. After doing that for many, many years, it finally, and I had been studying reality creation. So we know.
You mean how the mind creates reality?
That's right.
Okay.
Exactly like what Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer,
right.
Abraham, any of the kind
what
of.
What the bleep, all those. Yeah.
What the bleep do we know?
Yes, I know all those people. I've interviewed a lot of those people.
I know
yes.
You get all of that. And,
yes.
And so there's lots of people teaching us individually how to do that in our own sphere.
Well, that's actually why I originally called the show New Realities, because it's all about that potential we have as divine beings to create the reality we choose to be in.
Exactly. And, Alan, that's why I've been I'm really excited about talking to you, because you've been on my radar for several years now, and I've been wanting to hook up with you. So this is just a perfect alignment and perfect timing.
Great. So then tell me then how it came to you and what exactly it is.
And so when I went into a meditation, I was instructed by my inner spirit, my own inner self, to go into meditation every day for an hour every day for 4 days and to ask, what is it that I can bring forth that's going to be of benefit? And so I called upon the earth, I called upon the galaxy, the beings of light, and, you know, I called upon spirit, whatever you want to call that, and I asked to be informed and to be awakened to that and to feel that, what could come through me that could actually help. And so what came through was literally a process of what I now call visionary stewardship, because I want to teach about and learn more and study more about manifesting, because I, like you, realize if this is true, that our thoughts and our feelings and our vibrations and our intentions can bring forth experience into reality, then gosh darn it, it's time for us to leverage that.
Yes.
So my thought was, the thought that began to emerge from this series of meditations is, it's time for us to leverage that collectively on behalf of our Earth life experience. Because as the Mayans say, I believe it was June 5th of 2005, if I'm correct, I may be wrong, but that it was the actual demarcation of an era within the Mayan calendar.
Oh, was that the Venus transit? Was that the Venus transit? Anyway,
I'm not sure if it had to do with Venus,
okay.
But it may have. It may have been when Venus came in, because I know it's very strong now. But it's about a switch from the age of power or power over to the age of ethics, which is also the age of co-creation.
Ethics, you said?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So the age of ethics is also the age of co-creation, because in order to co-create, we really have to be transparent and ethical in order to really do it on a positive level. In other words, if we're not going to have the dictator who's telling us all how to live anymore, that's
right.
The power over structures,
right.
You know, we're going to have an age of co-creation. Well, what does that mean? How do we do that? You know?
Yes, tell us how we do that.
So what came through to help us learn how to do this is this process of visionary stewardship called Anchor the Dream. And basically, it's a workshop setting. That we do, that I've done around the country, and I love to do, and hold space for.
Uh-huh.
And we basically start with the idea of looking at what's happening on the planet. What is our reality that we're facing now? The good, the bad, the ugly. Mm-hmm. We look at it as it is.
Right.
What's really getting you passionate now, whether you hate it or you love it? What's going on the planet? We get a picture of that. We look at that and we get real with that.
Uh-huh.
And then we take that information and break that into, maybe, depending on how many people are in the group, maybe if there's 30 people, we'll do, five groups of six or something like that.
So if people say, I want to end the war or something like that. Yeah,
we put that on there. And so then, of course, what we learn from reality creation is that we turn that around to, we want peace.
Right. Okay.
So, first we've got to put the contrast out there so we can see what we don't want. And what we don't want helps us to see what we do want.
Because you don't want to say, I don't want war. You want to say, what you do, I get
That's
it. Because you're just creating more of what you don't want.
That's right. That's right. But, however, from where we are now, there's a lot of what we don't want in our face.
Yes, and we have to actually acknowledge the truth of that.
That's right.
Okay, I got it.
Acknowledge the truth of it, and that also helps people get it out of their system and on the board, and we literally write this down and look at it, and then we decide, well, what of all this stuff, how does this break down into topics?
Uh-huh.
And then we might have six topics, like sustainability, spirituality comes up sometimes, or, healing, communication systems on the planet, education, how are we... and it could be any number of things like that
that
come up depending on the energy of that particular group that get crystallized into kind of focused topics.
Just one thing about this reality of the negative. When I've been talking to someone named Paul Levy, do you know him, Awaken the Dream? He says those negative aspects are our unconscious parts of ourselves showing their face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And by embracing them, by looking at them, they start to... be less unconscious, and we can start to change them. So.
Absolutely. And the subconscious, we can't tell it it's wrong and expect it to change. We need to see what's in there, what's real for that part of ourselves.
So then you mark these certain topics, and then what else happens?
And then what happens next is we ask everyone to gravitate to whatever one of these topics the group has come up with for it for that day that it wants to work on.
Uh-huh.
On behalf of our collective humanity. We ask everyone to gravitate. Somebody claims it. Somebody claims it and says, I'm going to stand for this. And then people gravitate to those topics that they're most passionate about. Because, again, the passion is the energy, and the energy is what informs and catalyzes and makes reality happen, right?
Right.
So you have the matter, which is the divine substance of the universe, and then you have the pattern, which is the particular idea.
Oh,
and so matter,
good.
Substance, and energy. And so you put the matter together with the pattern, and you've got you know, the universe making love and bringing forth new things, right?
That is such a good way, matter and pattern.
Yeah.
That is so good, because I talk about patterns in the work I do with symbols and the subconscious. But, yeah, go ahead.
And so that's the father energy and coming together with the mother.
Yes,
energy.
It's brilliant, yes.
That's the basic thing here, basic facts of life going on.
So you look at, okay, so what? So you, the people get together in a group, someone stands for it, and then what happens?
And then what happens is people go into a personal vision, because the other part of the belief that we're working with here, which I feel strongly about, is that each, and if we're moving into the age of collective co-creation, we really need to get this. Each one of us has a very important role to play. Each one of us has a piece of the vision and a piece of the energy and a piece of the solution. Mm-hmm. And so as we begin to honor that in each person, it empowers them to become the leaders that they are. So I feel like one of my main jobs is empowering leaders of the new paradigm to wake up and realize who they are. Yes, you create differently than others. You're not in the power over structure. So how do you create? So I want to create opportunities where people can feel and resonate with their own sense of inner leadership and the way that they lead. And so one important step to that is a very simple thing, which is just allowing everyone to go into a unique shamanic vision within their pod. And usually we do it in a fun way, like people's heads together and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they go into a specific meditation, which allows them to access what is their piece of that vision.
I see. Great.
And then when they emerge, they share.
Okay, they share verbally.
They share verbally with their own pod.
Right.
So at this point, people are separated into little pods so that they can work on this specific aspect.
Well, I've actually been doing that with a group in New York that I helped found called the Coalition for One Voice, which is a collective of a lot of spiritual groups coming together for a one voice, which created a single vision of how conscious change can take place. So we're at that point where we've broken down into pods and share our collective vision, but I think you have another piece
here's
here.
The next step. And yes, and so also, like, for example, I'm sure you've heard of the Pachamama Alliance. You'll want to find out more about them as well, and they sort of take it to this level as well, and they do some other types of exercises. And the piece that I'm offering that seems to be new to many groups is this idea of then having these pods create a visionary drama. So they talk about it. They all share their vision. Then they talk about how that's significant and what they want their drama to be. And, you know, to me it's interesting, the word drama and dream and the word play, you know, a drama is a play, is a dream.
Right.
And so we're awakening in the dream as the dreamers of the new reality, and we're dreaming our new reality into existence. Mm. And dream and drama, really, to me, are almost the same word. And so as we then, so what happens, each pod is creating a play and a drama and a dream to share with the others.
In an entertaining or serious way as well?
Yeah. It's like, in other words, it tends to usually be very playful and high vibrational. And because we are usually, we're eating a lot of raw food, there's always raw chocolate there, you know, for whoever wants that, right?
That'll keep you awake.
Keep your energy happy and high.
Yes. Yes.
And then just the energy of being together, focusing on all these things. You know, in the Abraham teachings, they talk about, you know, if you're focusing on something you love, your vibration is going to be high and you're going to get really happy.
Mm.
And then that high vibrational frequency energy coming through you is that substance which is going to imprint that pattern.
Mm.
And the pattern is the idea. The pattern is what that group has just discussed.
Uh-huh.
The energy behind the people observing, because, you know, the whole two or more gathered thing, it magnifies our spiritual power. Great.
So by acting out or doing the play of what their vision is, it puts it out into the collective consciousness to become a reality?
We are dialing in new blueprints for Earth life based on agendas of our own choosing to save the planet at the last possible second with the most fun ever as we can.
But the other key that's coming to me about what you're saying is the act of creativity is our connection to the source, and it's creativity that creates new patterns, which creates the new future and the new realities.
That's right. And if we, so there's levels of reality creation too.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, you can create just with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And what the master teachers say about that is if we're creating just with our thoughts about what we think is going to be a good idea, we create on one level, and we can have some success with that. However, it typically won't last and won't be terribly satisfying.
Mm.
There's three steps, and the middle step then would be to say, well, I want to not only create with my mind, I also want to create with my heart. I want to create my heart and my feelings and what I personally feel is good, and I want to bring that aspect in. And so when we start to create with the heart, then things are going to last more, they're going to feel more refreshing, and they're going to feel more whole, and they're going to stabilize our lives more.
Mm. And then then when you actually act it out and put it into the body, it actually grounds the vision into the concrete reality.
It does. And then there's another level for creating in an even higher way. Well, I want to call higher, lower, however, you know,
a higher frequency. There are higher and lower frequencies.
A more aligned way. Yeah, so
yeah.
That's when we not only create with our mind, and then we bring in the heart, but we also bring in each other, the planet, and God, spirit, life, nature.
How do you do that?
You actually literally, this is a high technology. This is not probably the highest technology I have personal access to at the moment on the planet. Once you've created that vision, once you've come to the conclusion of what you and your collective think is the best vision for Earth, you then literally take that and energetically, spirit, divine presence of love itself, Mother Nature, I give this to you. Please qualify it, bless it, make any other suggestions for how it could be better, and give it back to us, blessed or modified.
And how does it get given back to you?
And it's a sort of a, you know, what you want to call a psychic experience or an intuitive experience of then you're, once you do that, you await a response from the inner prompting, and it may be like, wow, that is just so right on and go. Or you might be like, wow, we could add this, and it could be... So then you've like included not only your brothers and sisters, but you've included the planet herself. You've included all of spirit, which is where we're all one, which knows everything. So then you've taken the whole act of creating to a whole another dimension altogether.
So just tell us a little bit of the transformations you've seen take place because of anchoring the dream.
What happens during an anchor the dream process is actually a lot of levels happen. A lot. Sometimes the frequency is so high in the room, people just have healings. They feel like they're like emotionally or physically they get healed.
That is beautiful.
Because
it's
literally it's just the frequency itself of the room. And since this is about us, I feel honored to be holding the space for this. You know, this is a gift coming through me for us and
wow.
for people to run with, you know, take it, run with it. You know what I'm saying?
And yeah, I mean, will you come to New York and do this with
my community? Absolutely, I would love to.
Great. I mean, so the best way to get in touch with you, if people like what they're hearing, and I think they would if they're listening, is to go to your website, anchorthedream.com.
Dream.com, and I can be reached at laura@anchorthedream.com.
And just to kind of wrap up, how do you then connect, and I think it's obvious in a way, Anchor the Dream with the Raw Spirit Fest, which is... you know, another aspect of that.
Exactly. These things are all so connected. One is the doorway to the other. And again, if how we create reality is through, you know, bringing in a high frequency of love and joy, you know, the people who aren't harming, you know the whole thing about the meek shall inherit the earth?
Yes.
So what is the meek? Meek is someone who's not hurting anyone.
Right. Right.
So in other words, the humble people. The people who are truly wanting to be in harmonious, co-creative community together.
Wow, nice.
And so it's an obvious match, this kind of desire to create community and this desire to learn more about how we create reality. I mean, it's humble, and you have to become humble in order to realize your greatness.
That, in a balanced way. I get it. No, I get it. I think we're all learning that one. We have to be ordinary to find out how extraordinary we are.
Because we have the power to shift this planet.
Well, we do, and let's hope more and more people really understand how much power we have.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the key. It's like, you know, I like to say, you know, it ain't over till the volleyball hits the sand, and it is time to dive for it, man. It's like, get in the sand and push this planet back up into the air, and you know what? We can do it.
We can. Are you from California? It sounds like something.
people always think I'm from California, but I'm from the East Coast.
Are you from the East Coast?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Virginia.
Oh, Virginia.
And family from New York originally.
Well, I think you're doing amazing things.
Thank you.
We need a billion of you on the planet.
Well, you know, it's just we're all waking up. It's just so much fun to see so many people popping, and I celebrate each one of us with our talents and our leadership abilities to get out there and really do who we are, because we need us.
What's amazing about you, and I can just tell from your voice, is that you live what it is that you're saying. You know, it's in your vibration, it's in your enthusiasm, and it actually helped lift me up. I was a little tired.
Oh, well, good. Well, yes, it's just, you know, it's time. It's time.
Yeah.
Somebody pressed the go button. I think it was me, and probably a million of those of us were ready. We're ready to make this shift, and the shift has definitely hit the fan.
It is.
You know, you were talking about getting out of the box earlier, mm-hmm. Ellen, and it's not only time to get out of the box. It's time to get out the X-Acto knife, break down the box, and recycle it.
That's right. And just live without a box. Live
exactly.
in the unknown. Live free in the creative essence that we are.
Yeah.
And enjoy life.
And the beautiful new patterns that we create out of the unified field will be more flowing.
Well, we need new patterns because the old ones have gotten us stuck. And so what you're doing is creating new patterns of behavior and thought and being. It's exactly what we need to birth a new time.
That's right.
Well, Laura, this has been really great for me.
Well, thank you, Alan, for me too. It's such an honor and a pleasure, and I'm really glad that we finally get a chance to connect.
Yeah, so we will connect in person. I'll report about the Raw Spirit Fest, which is coming up October 12th to 14th. There's still space available, right?
There's still space available, yes, and we're looking forward to having you and your crew there.
Yes, we will be there doing videotapes, and I will be reporting back. And it's in my favorite spot in the world is Sedona, Arizona.
Absolutely, and people can find out about it at rawspirit.com. We're actually even looking for volunteers still, so if anybody wants to volunteer, they can send me an email at laura@rawspirit.com, and that's a half-price ticket.
Great. Laura, let's do some more interviews.
We'll do, anytime. I love it. Thank you so much.
And we'll talk about bringing you to New York and getting you out there.
Sounds fabulous. I can't wait. You guys have a wonderful night.
Yes, I really appreciate your work.
Thank you, Ella.
Okay.
And I yours. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night, Laura. I've been talking to Laura. We're going to go to our break now, and we're going to have my second guest of the evening on, so stay tuned. Okay.
Thank you.
personalities. My second guest of the evening is someone who will really inspire us with some of the traditional wisdom that he's been a holder of. He is Chief Orville Looking Horse of the Lakota people, and he is a 19th generation keeper of the White Buffalo Calf Pipe Bundle. He's also the founder of the Wo Lakota Foundation, and he's going to be talking to us about the Lakota traditions and how it really relates to this time and this place that we're in now at this cycle in the Earth's history. Chief Orville?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I think it's good to give us a background a little bit about the wisdom that the Lakotas have for, well, people sort of know what they've been through, but also where we are now and how Lakota wisdom fits into the world situation. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I'd like to first of all say Wopila. It's a great honor to be on the radio here, and I am living on the reservation in South Dakota, Cheyenne River Reservation, and I, since the age of 12 years old, I have been the keeper of the sacred bundle. Yeah, so my life is based on ceremonies and our traditions, our culture and traditions. So that's the way.
But can you talk about the sacred bundle? I mean, what does that mean? Because for people who don't know what that is.
Okay. 19 generations ago. Because I am the 19th generation, and wow, this bundle is a spirit bundle, and it chooses the keeper. So when my grandmother, 1966, before she went into the spirit world, she told me that spirit bundle it chooses the keeper, so it chose me.
19 generations, that's like 2,000 years or something, right?
Yeah, because one lifespan is one generation to us.
But what's in the bundle? What is it a bundle of?
It's I'd like to share with you that short story, but long ago, after we have our creation story.
Yeah.
And
I would love to hear it if you want to tell the creation story then.
Yes. Well, in a creation story, those Ia is rock or stone people.
Uh-huh.
Ia Oyate, then we have the Maniwichoni, this is water of life. And when these two came together, it brought energy. We call Wawakan.
Uh-huh.
And then we have the creation story where the two-legged, the four-legged, and the winged ones, all the animals got their colors, and you know how animals became.
They came out when the stone people met the waters of life, created life on the earth, and created all. Is that what you're saying? Created the four-legged and the two-legged.
Yeah, after the first creation.
Right, that makes sense.
And then our creation is that we came from as two-legged from the Black Hills of South Dakota,
uh-huh,
which is it's the heart of Uchimaka, Grandmother Earth,
uh-huh,
and that's where our first people live within the Black Hills, and so up to this day. No, we take care of the heart of Grandmother Earth.
You take care of it as caretakers of the Black Hills.
Yes. So that's where our ancestors came from. And I'll get back to that.
Okay.
After I tell this story about this. Was after that, there's a creation story where the two-legged and the four-legged had a race around the racetrack. There's a, around the Black Hills.
Uh-huh.
And there the like the story is that the two-legged one, the two-legged one. So all these animals were coming into like a group in groups to the people, saying that because you won that great race around the Black Hills of South, like a around the Black Hills, there's a racetrack,
mm-hmm.
and so the next day they had a great council, and all these animals were coming to the people and said, "No, we would help you from this day. We would help you." And when you, but you need to pray for us too.
Right.
Say there's a word called Medakriya Oyasi. It's all my relation. That's
how
that came to be.
Right. I've heard that Matakawasi.
Yeah. So then instead, so they made a prophecy back then too that. We have a lot of prophecies that goes way back into creation. This is one of them about the animal nation. Like the eagle, there was all these groups of animals, and like the coyotes and the bear and the elk and deer, and then there's the eagle. The eagle said, we would fly the highest and see the sun first.
Right.
And then, but your prayers would keep us strong up there every day. The day that your prayers are weak and your offerings, spirit food, we say prayers with our food before do our ceremony. So
the blessing of the food. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened next was the eagle said when these offerings were not there and they're weak, then that's going to lower us and lower us until someday we would go into places where we have never gone before.
Mm.
And this, when that time happens, we would see some things that we have never seen before.
What kind of stuff were they meaning?
That means the crossing boundaries.
So the kind of stuff would be the kind of the descent into the lower worlds, into the, I mean, it's kind of a loss of energy on the planet or something?
Yes. like people would disrespect each other or no.
Uh-huh.
Boundaries would be crossed.
Uh-huh. Oh, so, I see. So the ego would see things move out.
That's the prophecy of the animal nation.
Uh-huh.
And they would animals would bite each other, or they would
be at war. I would.
Yeah, there's a confusion with the environment.
Oh, I see. And that it does seem to be what's happening in some ways.
Yes, that's what is happening. Then the next is the story that I'm going to tell you is that with that bundle that
you
took care of.
Yeah,
is the people were supposed to follow this tradition or this way of life, and then they would pray for the animals. But pretty soon, the people, they became like, because there was the mind and the body and spirit that they were in our honoring the sacredness.
Yes.
Of a man is a mind and body and spirit.
Right.
So what happened was, they start to, with their mind, they tried to, they took more than what they need.
The mind of man or humans took more. They got greedy and took more than what they needed from the earth.
Yes, greedy. Yep, that's
right. Yes. Okay.
So, what happened was, all the food disappeared and the buffalo disappeared.
Right.
So every day they sent two scouts out to travel. And then one day they were sitting on the hill and they saw from the distance this woman was coming towards them. And the scout said, "Wonder what this woman is doing out here. We are nowhere." And one scout said, "Well, she's a beautiful woman. I must take her as my wife or my woman." And the other scout said, "No, don't do that because our people are praying for food. There's no food. Our people are sick and hungry." And then as she came, she pointed to the one with the bad thoughts. And when what happened was when the clouds lifted, a cloud enveloped, and when he went to her, and when the clouds lifted, he was in skeleton. And she said to the other scout, she said, "Go back and tell the people what you have seen."
Wait, what happened to the other guy?
Well, he had bad thoughts.
Bad what?
Bad thoughts.
Thoughts.
Yeah.
And then what happened to him after the cloud lifted?
He was in skeleton.
Oh, I see. So the woman said to the other guy, "Go back and tell people what you've seen."
Yes.
Okay.
And so he went home and he told the people that this woman came to them and then that she would come to them again.
Yes.
And so the next day they prepared and sure enough she came. And she was still, she had a bundle on her arms.
Uh-huh.
And she came and she was singing some songs. And up to this day, we kept these songs in our ceremonies.
The songs this woman sang, you've kept alive.
Yeah.
Can other people hear them, or are they just sacred for Lakota?
I can sing you one of the songs.
Well, okay. After we finish the story, maybe you could. But she came to the Lakota, gave them these songs.
Yeah, she came and she sang the songs, and then she brought. She came into this place where the people were waiting in a circle.
Uh huh.
And the people laid sage down on the ground. Because that's what the instruction was. So they laid a sage down, and then she came and she opened the bundle, and there's a piece of long wood and a red stone.
Oh, this was the first medicine pipe.
Yeah, this first sacred pipe.
Was it the first pipe?
Yeah, the first pipe ever.
She gave the pipe to the Lakota people.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So, and the people look at this red stone and this long piece of wood, and then she told the people that you're going to put it together like this.
Right, the wood inside the...
And then there's some tobacco here. It's called chanshasha, the red willow tobacco.
Huh?
And you're going to pray to the west and put it into the pipe. And then you pray to the north and put it into the pipe. And while you sing these songs, you're going to sing these songs. And she kept singing these songs.
Huh.
And then she prayed to, said, "You're going to honor the grandfathers to the four directions,
uh-huh.
and the Great Spirit and Mother Earth. And then that's what you can put the tobacco in.
Uh-huh.
And then you're going to pray. You're going to pray with this chanupa. You're going to pray with this," she said. "And then after you finish, you're going to..." Then she pointed to the first keeper. "Okay, this is the first keeper. His name is Tatanka Waslanaji.
The first keeper of the bundle.
Yeah, 19 generations ago, the first keeper. Okay, so he put this the wood to his mouth and said, Cha Oompa. Cha is wood, and Oompa is smoke.
Uh-huh.
And she lit the that the that's how that pipe came about. Was
she lit the pipe for the first time? The white buffalo woman.
Yep.
You know, there's many traditions where a divine feminine would appear and give something to the people. In India, it's the goddess Kali, or there's in Egypt Isis. In many of these traditions, it's similar, but she gives a boon or a gift that's relevant to that culture. So it's interesting that you're telling a Lakota story based on this appearance of the divine feminine.
Uh-huh.
And so you're saying you still have that original pipe?
Yes, that's the original pipe that I'm taking care of.
So okay. It's really a pipe from spirit that manifests from spirit?
Yes.
That's amazing. And is this something you take with you on your trips?
No, it stays in one place, but, you know, we, every year, you know, we have a different, of course, you know, we pray all the time with this, our way of life, we say. Because, we have a lot of ceremonies, you know, every week, and it's always ongoing, ceremonies for a lot of different things, that we do in, So, getting back to bringing that of the sacred pipe there.
Yeah.
When she left, she went towards the west and on top of the hill there.
Uh-huh.
She rolled over and she stood up and there. She became a young black buffalo.
A young black buffalo.
Yeah. And then she rolled over and she stood up and she became a red. Black or red buffalo. Then the third time was a yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth time she stood up, she became a white buffalo. And that's what calf, she went over the hill as a white buffalo calf.
Uh-huh.
So the people said, okay, we're going to call this spirit woman the white buffalo calf woman.
And she left some prophecies for the times now that are coming?
Yes. She told the people that next time I come back, there's going to be a lot of... next time I stand upon the earth as a white buffalo calf.
Uh-huh.
With black nose, black eyes, and black hooves. She told the people, next time I stand, come back and stand upon the earth, there's going to be great changes.
Uh-huh.
And
has she come back?
Well, the first white buffalo calf was born in Janesville, Wisconsin, 1994.
The first, was that her coming back in form?
Well, it's these signs. It's the white buffalo calves being born.
And wait, there was more than one?
Yeah, almost every year. A white buffalo calf stood upon the earth someplace, somewhere.
Mm.
And that's a prophecy because when I was 12 years old, when they told me about these prophecies, I thought I would never see that in my generation, in my time, or in this generation.
Went to see these white buffalo calves?
Yeah, we did go over and did ceremonies, but no, we've been there's so many calves being born today, and
so many white buffalo calves being born.
Well, this year another one was born in by La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Huh.
So
does it bring tears to your eyes to see this when
Because it's overwhelming. Now, every time a white buffalo calf is born. We say it's a blessing, but it's a warning.
It's a warning. Why? What else did she say before she left? That what should we really look out for in these like major times of transition?
Great changes.
Did she say specifically anything?
That we need to, come together as humble, spiritual, get back to our spiritual way of life.
All the people of the earth, all the two-leggeds.
Yep.
Not just the Lakota.
Yep.
I mean, how are the Lakota people still, like the young Lakotas, are they still interested in the old ways, or are they leaving the tribe and leaving the Black Hills?
Well, we're still living on the reservations. Mm-hmm. But
are people leaving, or are they strong? Is the tradition still strong?
A lot of our people were Christianized through the boarding school era.
I see. So
So a lot of our people, but there's, I would say the younger people are coming back to getting back to our tradition now.
Mm. What do you think it was? Was it this connection with the white Buffalo Calf woman that kept the Lakota more intact than some of the other Native Americans, you think?
I don't know. We kept our ceremonies pretty much intact all the time.
But a lot of other tribes sort of, lost the ancient ways and gotten absorbed within the rest of the culture.
Yes, we're in the middle of the country, and then from the east and the west, we still maintain our tradition very strong and our ceremony. So a lot of people, I understand what you're saying, because a lot of people using our, we call it the Inipi ceremony, but a lot of people call it the sweat lodge ceremony, like that.
They
borrow things like that from our tribe, our people here.
So what should we do? How can we bring ourselves back and what does Lakota say and the White Buffalo Calf Woman prophecy say about helping the planet, come back to its natural state? Is there anything specific?
Yes. There's a lot of prophecies, but I would like to say is what we're doing right now is with Wolakota.
The Wolakota, that's Wolakota Foundation.
.org.
Yeah, .org, yes.
Yeah, yes, that's on June 21st every year, we like the people to come together however they want to, as a global community.
Uh-huh.
And bring the families together and we have a World Peace Prayer Day on June 21st.
June 21st, the first day of summer.
And I'd like to someday even further to be recognized as an international holiday.
Because
on this day, we do ceremonies. We do ceremonies all the time, but this is a day that we do ceremony for the sun.
Uh-huh.
And it's the longest day, the summer solstice.
Right. You do the sun dance then, too?
Yes, there's a lot of sun dances and a lot of different ceremonies that goes on during that time.
Uh-huh.
But some people say, it's a time when, there's two moon, two suns, the sun is, coming up and the moon is just not going down.
Right. So it's sort of a crack between the dimensions that time.
Yeah, it's a lot of different, we've been all over the world, and a lot of people during that time do that ceremony, and that's where we, like around the Dakotas and, you know, neighboring tribes here, when we journeyed to talk about like the global warming.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people said, you know, we need to get back to like on June 21st.
Mm.
So we rode from northern, way up in northern Canada, and we rode on horseback through Montana into Devil's Tower, and when we got there, we did a ceremony, and former President Clinton, he said, "Let these Indian people now do the ceremony."
Yeah.
For the World Peace and Prayer Day.
Yeah.
So we did it. But it was the climbers that took us to court, and then because they wanted to climb Devil's Tower on that day. So they took us to court, and we won that court case the year 2000.
Huh.
So, you know, and I told the people, I said, you know, there's so much like a Devil's Tower, and
yeah,
there's Devil's Lake, and a lot of our sacred sites are named Devil.
Devil's Tower is a sacred site to the Lakotas?
Yes, it is.
Where is it located, Devil's Tower?
It's on the northwest side of the Black Hills.
Oh, that's what Steven Spielberg put in his Close Encounters movie, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's where it
is. Well, that's a beautiful... That became a sacred site for a lot of people interested in UFOs.
It's been a sacred site for many tribes too, and when I was very young, one of my grandfathers said that you know, the Black Hills is the heart, and I remember he said that someday like the Black Hills is in Rapid City. They sell, in Rapid City, South Dakota, they sell in a museum this poster, and they took this picture from the satellite view, and there's it shapes like a heart.
Oh, the actual Black Hills are shaped like a heart?
Yeah.
Oh, so interesting.
So when they put that red fluorescent light on there, then they see the mountains and the river.
Uh-huh.
It looks like an open heart.
Interesting. Now, did the White Buffalo Capitalism have any predictions about global warming? Or anything that the Earth, how the Earth is actually going to?
Yeah, that's when she stands upon the Earth, there'd be great changes. There's going to be, they call it big winds.
Hurricanes.
And the Earth changes where earthquakes going to happen where never happened before. So there's a lot more, but you know, they talked about Earth changes and climate changes.
And did she say how long this might last?
Well, it's up to the people. No, it's up to the people to get back. And what the prophecy said was like, no, there's lack of faith.
Uh-huh.
And it's up to the people to have faith in these signs, like the white animals being born. It's not going to be only just the white buffalo calf, but there's going to be and a lot of white animals showing their sacred color.
Uh-huh.
And
like white bears, like white, well, I guess they are white bears, but
white moose.
A white moose.
Yeah.
Have you seen one of those?
Yes, I see it in Canada.
Wow.
And then I have a lot of white alligator. You know,
huh.
White. There's so many white animals being born today.
I mean, it's a loss of pigment for whatever reason, but it's connected to some higher spiritual nature. It seems like, huh?
Yeah, because the animals, you know, we're supposed to be the voice for the animal nation.
Mm.
That's the only way that the animals can speak to us is to show their sacred color, which is white.
Oh, I see. So when the animals show their sacred color, it's reminding us to return to the sacred ways.
Yeah.
Now, was the ghost dance part of the Lakota tradition?
No.
Oh, because that was outlawed because it actually opened up the doorways, I think. But
Volka, he was in fact, he, I believe that he's from he wasn't part of our tribe.
Are you the main chief of the Lakota people now?
One of them.
How many are there?
We got a lot of different chiefs. I can't exactly.
But do you meet the chiefs of other tribes or other, you know,
no,
countries? I mean, like, have you been met the Dalai Lama and?
I met a lot of great leaders like Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu and.
Right, and now do you share the prophecies with them when you meet them, right?
Yes, I talked about our prophecies about White Buffalo Calf being born and doing June 21st. On the sacred site day.
And what happens as a result of those meetings? What do they feel we can do together?
Well, basically, I think their message is similar to ours, where we need to unite as people. And I went to United Nations. I've been going to United Nations since 1993. I did the opening prayer at United Nations in New York. And since then, I've been going back. But recently, a few years ago, I don't know if you heard about it, but all the churches and the spiritual leaders, you know, went to United Nations.
Oh, I think I did hear about that.
Yeah, they, so they talked about our prophecies and living on the reservations. You know, we have our ceremonies here, and when I heard the religious people and the spiritual leaders from different countries talk about the same prophecies, I said, "Wow!" I said, this is I can't believe how spiritually connected a lot of different nations are.
Oh, yeah, totally. And also on your website, you said part of the prophecy is that the seventh generation would come together to mend the sacred hoop, restore the spirit of the nations, and unite all nations to heal our Mother Earth.
Yes.
That's the Waloka Foundation's mission.
Yeah. I am the spiritual leader of the right on horseback back to Wounded Knee. We started back in the mid-80s,
uh-huh.
And then we did a ceremony in 1990, which was back in the 1890. They said that the sacred hoop of the nation was broken at Wounded Knee.
Well, people who don't know Wounded Knee, can you just, I know it's an awful story, but can you tell us just a little bit what happened at Wounded Knee?
Yeah, Wounded Knee.
Because a lot of people aren't familiar with it. I mean, I know there's that book called I Buried My Heart at Wounded Knee, but what actually happened at Wounded Knee?
And there's a movie that was recently made. And a lot of people, said at least it was made, but no, it was really the way the. It wasn't really the way the film was made.
But what actually happened there?
Well, back in 1890, a lot of our people, I'll take you back to before that was broken treaties. And
right.
And then they went to, broken treaties and a lot of... people worked because of crazy horse. No, he...
Was he a Lakota chief, Crazy Horse?
Yeah, he was a...
Yeah,
he was a person that, brought the people together, then we had, Custard and,
Oh, right, the whole massacre.
There was a war that took place and then at Little Bighorn, and that's all. The Lakota people and some of the people that helped out, they won at Little Bighorn, and after that, there was a lot of massacres that took place.
By the U.S. government coming in and massacring the Lakota people.
Yeah. And a lot of wounded knees that took place, but the main one that Rick Cloud, he invited Bigfoot to come to Wounded Knee, but
Red Cloud was an amazing being. I mean, I was getting a couple of years back, I was getting the feeling of this amazing spiritual energy that Red Cloud was. Was he a great spiritual teacher to the Lakota for you too?
Well, he signed a 1868 treaty. The people at the time didn't really recognize him because he wasn't. They call him the paper tree chief.
Oh, so I guess he wasn't so good for the Lakota people.
But he did sign the treaty.
Did that help secure?
That
treaty was broken, you're saying?
Well, our people, our people are our oral tradition that, we don't really believe in owning. One of our chiefs said, they said that, we don't own the land, the land owns us, it's a very spiritual place, we need to get back to our medicine and our protecting our medicine and our territory.
And also to share that way of life with the rest of the world now, because this is what we need to restore the idea of the sacred hoop. This is what we need now to get back to the earth.
Well, that's the thing that we need. We're still maintaining, and we need to get back to is their original teachings and then our medicine, natural medicine.
The natural medicine, plant medicine.
And plant medicine, and that's what because pills. A lot of our people pills, our people are getting, last 100 years are affecting their kidneys and...
Is there a movement among the Lakota people to bring the natural medicine back and get rid of the Western medicine?
I think with global warming and all the crises and all the problems that we're faced with, a lot of people are getting back to... are respecting our tradition once again.
Because they're finding it's more valuable than just the, superficial tradition that's developed out of some of the West, So what is the idea of the sacred hoop? What does that mean?
The sacred hoop is a big hoop that people... need to get back to and to understand that there's a way of life is to bring holistically everything back together.
This sacred hoop encompasses the planet itself.
Yeah, it's the planet and in a ceremony bringing that sacred hoop, bring everything, our family circle back together.
Yeah.
And then, and the planet back together.
So, like, I mean, what can you leave us with as the best way to restore the spirit of the nations of the earth? What can you tell us that will help?
It's like on June 21st, coming together and respect each other's tradition and culture, and because in a global community, you know, we're all faced with a lot of global disasters, and what is happening with the environment. And I want to share with you, one of my elders said about the Black Hills, is that someday when they make those dams, that making of those dams is going to affect us, our people.
Because they're affecting the energy of the earth, of the mother.
Yes, that's right. So when they start, that it was made for that water to flow good, and it's pure, and we need to keep it that way. But when they start making those dams, we're going to see a lot of young people die of heart attack early.
Because the life force isn't flowing anymore.
Yes, that's right. So today, this year, I buried two of my relatives that were, one was mid-40s and one was early 50s. Dying of heart attack.
So you're saying that the people are so connected to the land that way, energetically?
Yes. We are a part of this environment in that way, where we need to do our ceremonies that's going to empower Grandmother Earth.
And what else can you tell us about the White Buffalo Calf Woman said that we should, how to be more in touch with the earth? What else can we do? I mean, I guess pray, but is there anything more specific?
To have the faith. What keeps coming back is faith. You need to have faith because what is happening today is, people are, there's so much negative energy. People, every family, there's a lot of foul language. And we need to bring the sacred energy back to our homes and our children.
Right, and if we uplift those people with our positive energy, let's say, with our energy of life and renewal, it will help bring others up as well. Just smiling, just being in joy, I think helps spread that energy of moving people up out of into a higher level.
Yes, energy started when the first creation, and then everything, we believe that everything has its own energy. And so what is happening is we keep building everything concrete, and we're not bringing life the tree nation. And we're cutting so much that wherever the rainforest, there's so much trees there. There's a lot of rain coming. In the area where in the south where there's so much concrete, hardly any rain because the energy of the rain.
Well, do you see times changing? Are more people, in your opinion, get awakening to the change, or are we still sort of in a downward spiral? I see a change myself. What do you see?
I believe it's sad to say, but no, it takes disasters to bring people to prayer. And
well, we've already seen a few disasters just in recent years, and hopefully people will see that, you know, it is time to change our ways.
Yep, that's right. You know, that's what that's why we're very I believe that, you know, we need to really focus our energy and our way of life to for the children to understand, you know, what is happening with the environment, because we're very much connected with the environment.
We are the environment. Our bodies are an extension of the earth, as I see it, you know.
Yes.
These are earth bodies. So, now these songs, because, you know, we're almost out of time, but the songs that the White Buffalo Cap Women gave the Lakota people, do they mean anything? What are the words represented? What are they for? I mean, do they change vibration?
Yeah, there's words in there. They seem to like we sing a song, then the second verse is all words. That's like the words. It says like
what do you want to sing? One.
Chanupa wa nichaupi. Then you bring you a sacred pipe. Danya yuza yo means uphold it in a good way. Ognash mayagna inte. That means don't fool me. And see, our prayers is everything is in our way of life, where, you know, even our language is there's no foul language.
There's no what language?
There's no foul language in our language.
No
foul language.
That's
cuss words.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. There's none of that in the Lakota language.
Yeah, because there's no in this way of life that we live. We're supposed to live a life that is so beautiful here upon the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposed to get up in the morning with a lot of good feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And because the Creator, to us, every day is a great mystery.
Yeah.
So that's the way that, you know, we believe that the clouds are not the same, and, you know, and the wind changes. And so, you know, things can change. Things can happen very quickly.
And it's a miracle just to be here and witness this creation.
Yes, that's right.
And so that is the true way of the Lakota people, of all people, I think, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so if you want to also, do you want to sing some of those songs?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that, and then we'll come back and then we'll wrap up. But I'd love to hear, you know, because this is actually from White Buffalo Cap. This is like a sacred song from the divine incarnation of the feminine given to the Lakota people.
And it's a ceremonial song for, you know, people that are sick.
Uh-huh.
Chanu pawane cha upelo danya yuzayo.
Beautiful. Thank you. I could almost smell the tobacco with it. And, because do they share the tobacco and the songs together? I mean,
we always fill our chanupa, then our pipe, our sacred pipe, and then we say our prayers. And then we smoke our pipe, our chanupa, our sacred pipe.
As a prayer to the breath.
Yeah, And then, you know, whatever we give to the grandfathers, it belongs to them.
The grandfathers are who?
The grandfather spirits.
Uh-huh.
That come to our ceremonies.
And you see them and you sense them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. So it's amazing you've kept this pipe in your tradition for 19 generations, and then you will pass it on as well.
It's up to the spirit bundle who the next keeper is.
You don't know yet, huh?
I don't know yet, but it stays in the family bloodline.
Oh, I see. So it has to be a son or a daughter or granddaughter, grandson?
Yes.
Does it go to women as well?
Yes, it was my grandmother was a woman.
Oh, right, you said that. So how does a spirit actually reveal that to somebody, to you?
Well, in our tradition, before... Like somebody dies here, and then our people, our relatives that from the Wanaka Goyate or the spirit, the people that have gone into the spirit world, that they come back and they come after this person.
Do you see these spirits?
Oh, we don't see them, but somebody is on their deathbed, and they start talking. We know that they're ready to go because they start talking to this their relatives.
Uh-huh. And then the spirits come back and say, now it's time to give the bundle to this person?
Yes. That's when they would tell who the next keeper would be.
Ah, I see. That's amazing tradition that's happened for 19 generations. So you're going to be coming to New York City, right, this week, I think.
Yeah.
To give some talks and about the Lakota ways?
Yeah.
And about the prophecies of the white buffalo calf woman?
Yeah.
And let me see, what I have that email somewhere. And you're going to be speaking, what day will you actually be here?
I'll be there on the 4th.
On October 4th, that's in 2 days.
Yeah, Integral Center or Yoga Center.
Oh, Integral Yoga Center.
Yeah, then on Friday be Open Center.
Oh yeah, no. Oh, I have it here. Yeah, Thursday, October 4th, 8:30, Integral Yoga. That is 227 West 13th Street, and then Friday, October 5th, at the Open Center. You should get a great crowd at the Open Center. That's a very popular place, and.
Okay.
And then also your website is Woloko.
Yeah, Wolakota.
W-O-L-A-K-O-T-A.
K-O-T-A.org.
.org. And there's lots of... it's a beautiful website, actually, with the, the red images there and the handprints. And it feels like what you're talking about, this ancient way. I mean, it really portrays what you're communicating. So is there anything you could leave us with, Chief Orville, about something we should notice or a prophecy we should remember?
Yes, I'd like to say that, we're living in a time when, there's so much... I know that we're at war in Baghdad, and in fact, I've been to Baghdad twice.
Really?
Yeah, and the first time I went, there's a prophecy about the black cloud would come and people would smell sickness in the air.
Huh.
And in 1990, I took a group of elders with me, and I went over there, and then 1990, and then the second time I went, as of this year in March, it'll be 4 years. So
was it really pretty strange? Was it I have to say, ridiculous for us to be over there? I mean, what was your feeling about Americans' presence there?
And this year, our ceremonies are like 4 days and 4 years. So this March will be the fourth year. So I hope hope and pray this year will be there'll be peace in
uh-huh.
Baghdad. But uh-huh. yeah, this is we're living a time and everything is about money.
Yeah.
And we need to get back to sake of our children. You know, we need to get back to our honor, everything that, you know,
huh.
like our teachings and their, I have respect for all different culture and traditions, and because we need to unite spiritually.
Yeah.
And that's the responsibility of all religious leaders and spiritual leaders to people to, you know, respect them, and because that's the foundation of all nations, is their spiritual guidance.
Thank you, Chief Orville Looking Horse. Thank you for sharing all the teachings and the wisdom from the Lakota people, and I look forward to meeting you in New York.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be in touch with your people here, and maybe we'll do a television interview as well.
Okay, what's the Wopla?
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Okay, good night.
Good night. I've been talking to Chief Orville Looking Horse of Lakota people. That is the Wolokota Foundation, or wolokota.org. And it's a foundation that is about spreading peace and prayers. And I definitely recommend going to the website, because it really gives you a feeling of what the teachings of the White Buffalo Calf Woman are. And it's actually there's a whole little book that you can order from this website about the teachings of the White Buffalo Calf Woman. This is New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld. Thank you for listening tonight to this program. It's heard every Tuesday night at 10:30 p.m. East Coast time, 7:30 West Coast time. I'm going to leave with a song called The Song of the Soul, Chris Williamson. If you have any questions, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net or check the website newrealities.tv, and I look forward to hearing from you and maybe speaking to you next week. So here's my song. Thank you for listening.